So I'm going to talk, my title is the Ehrlich-Drau Algebra and Two-Formality, but I noticed my title's in quotes, like the organizers weren't really sure what I was going to talk about. So I want to start off with a prologue, and it's going to be syzygies and topology. So what's a syzygy? In algebra, syzygy means a connection between objects, and it's kind of appropriate that that's the first word on the board, because arrangements are sort of a syzygy, in a sense, between algebra and combinatorics and topology and geometry. So I'd like to actually say thanks to Peter for being one of the progenitors of such a fantastic field where so many neat threads come together, and there's a lot of us that sort of come from different backgrounds, so I'm going to try to put in lots of elementary things, which means I'll talk very, very fast, as usual. So anyhow, thanks to Peter, and also thanks to the organizers for putting together such a wonderful conference. So I want to begin with syzygies, and I want to try to, Jan Erik actually put some Betty tables on the board yesterday. I found, when I first was learning sort of commutative algebra, I found Betty tables to be rather enigmatic, so I want to try to unlock the mystery, which it's just notation, but let's suppose that we're in K of XY, starting. So Corrado said I want to be more stupid, so I'm going to be very stupid here for a while, and I want to take the ideal generated by X squared and Y cubed. Right, so, and now I want to take a free resolution, let's call this ring R, and I want to take a free resolution of R mod I, that is an exact sequence terminating over here. So sequence of free R modules mapping onto here. Of course, the first map here, this is quotient by I, so this has no choice to be anything but the most stupid of all possible things, right? So everybody's okay so far, right? So I've got the start of an exact sequence, but here's where the first sort of surprising thing happens. So I want to work, and actually throughout the talk we're going to work with graded objects, and so here, I'm going to, obviously this is a rank 2 module, but the unit here gets mapped to, well, E1 gets mapped to X squared and E2 gets mapped to Y cubed. That's not taking degree 0 objects to degree 0 objects, so we introduce a bit more notation. So what does this notation mean? Here, this is a free module, which is just a copy of my ring. But the generator, the notation's a little weird. This means that the generator is in degree 2. So this is a matter of bookkeeping, but this is how it's written. So in particular, R, I in degree J is a vector space, and we're always working over a field. These are graded rings. So this is just R in degree I plus J. Right? So this puts the this weird notation puts the generator in degree 2. And then you say, what are the, so what's a syzygy? It's something that connects these things. So it's a polynomial relation. There's one staring us in the face, so let's just write it down without being stupid. Right, so clearly if I multiply y cubed times x squared and minus x squared times y cubed, I get 0. So this is sort of a linear algebra with polynomials. Now, this generator was in degree 2. A cubic is hitting it, so the generator over here is now going to have, so I won't call on, although I could call on people, Alex having dozed off already and having called on me, and already rubbing his brow. I won't. So what goes here? Somebody volunteer. Grad student, help me out. I will buy the grad student a beer. Okay, so this is going to be a minus 5 here, and the reason is that a cubic generator, which is, you know, this is taking something of whatever degree, multiplying it up by 3, and it lands on something of degree 2, therefore it has to be of degree 5. So this is a free resolution. In fact, there could be more stuff in this kernel, but it's easy to convince yourself there's not. So here's this little graded free resolution. And now those diagrams that Jan Erik were drawing, how would we write this thing as this sort of Betty table? So we would write it like this. So, and if you use advertisement for Macaulay too, so I always get endorsement fees from my former advisor when I advertise this, you would see a picture, if you say Betty of R mod I, you'll see a picture that looks like this. So let's figure out what the heck this means, and you'll see little numbers like this. So the first thing to observe, how do we interpret this? So the 1, 2, 1, these are the ranks of the modules in the free resolution, rank 1, rank 2, rank 1. That's not so hard to figure out. Where do these entries in the Betty table appear? Well, these entries capture the shifts in the free resolution, the way that I'm shifting it. And to figure out what the shifts are, you have to count over and down. So if I count here, step 1, step 2, this 1 corresponds to this free module. I count step 1, step 2, step 3, that corresponds to this free module generating degree 3. If I count step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4, step 5, that corresponds to 5 here. Tom? Those are just matrices. This is linear algebra with polynomials. So what I've got, I have a polynomial ring, right? But I forget about it. If these were so think of this as matrices with polynomial entries, and think of linear algebra, but linear algebra done with polynomials. So here, if I had a 2x1 matrix, or 1x2 matrix, that would give me a map from a two-dimensional vector space to a one-dimensional vector space. Now it's, instead of a vector space, it's two copies of the ring, that is a free module of rank 2, to a free module of rank 1. Nothing but linear algebra with polynomials. And now this matrix of polynomials has a kernel, and the kernel is precise. And it's easy to check. Why is it relevant? Because what I'm trying to produce. So essentially, what happens here, just like if you have an exact sequence of vector spaces, the dimension of the vector space on the end is captured by the alternating sum of the dimensions of the vector spaces going back. Right? So this is an Euler characteristic thing. What are you gaining in the maps? Right. So that was actually why I was talking about the dimensions of the vector spaces, because just like, so let me try to explain what we gain by having the maps. If a sequence is not exact, in a sense what this does is, if you have an exact sequence, so if we went back to a derived category talk, I could replace this object with this complex because these guys have the same homology. Now, but that's way too highbrow. So what I want to do is talk about this Euler characteristic thing. So if I wanted to compute the dimension of this is a graded object. It has dimensions in each degree. If I wanted to compute the dimension here, I could compute that dimension as an alternating sum of the dimensions of these pieces. But the point is, going back to Corrado's stupid formula, the dimension of a polynomial ring in degree D is easy to write down. So these pieces you know, and so this piece you don't know. So, of course, you're replacing one thing with something else you have to find, but the point is that this object gets replaced by simple objects, so all the action is encoded in the maps. But you've got to find the maps, but a computer can do this. So, so that's, I guess, what I would say. Anyhow. And this thing is encoded here. All right, so now to arrangement. So that's sort of the start. I was already supposed to be done with the first three blackboards by now, actually, so I'm going to start talking really fast. Anyhow, so how about arrangements? And I'll start becoming illegible. My students hate me. So how about we take, can everybody see this guy? This is the A3 arrangement. So I've got six lines in P2. I have four triple points. Four points where three lines coincide, and then one, two, three simple points, right? And this is a projective picture, so this point and this point are the same. So if we resolve, I won't define the Ehrlich-Solomon algebra. So the Ehrlich-Solomon algebra A, we know, is a quotient of the exterior algebra with number of generators equals number of hyperplanes modulo this ideal I. I can do the same game that I just did in sort of a simple case here with resolving. This is a quotient of an exterior algebra. I can resolve this guy over the exterior algebra. Of course, in this case, we know that for the Ehrlich-Solomon algebra, each of these triple points gives me a quadratic in this Ehrlich-Solomon ideal. So I know that in this little toy example that I have four quadratic generators, right? So this is just a matrix with these four quadratics. And it turns out that those are all the things you need to generate the ideal. And so the resolution keeps going back, and in Betti table terms, this resolution is going to look something like this. Again, this is something, so you'll see something that looks like four. There's our four quadratic relations. It turns out there's 10 linear syzygies, 15, 26, stuff, put a 25 up here. So these things are called the graded Betti numbers. Of course, this is what you're really expressing, the dimension of these pieces in the free resolution. These are just expressing Tor over E, in this case, of A, C, I, J. So this I corresponds to where you are back. This J counts how far you are down. So, for example, in this picture, tour 2, 3 would be this number 10 right here. That's counting the number of linear syzygies on our quadratic relations. Okay, so this is just this is all just bookkeeping now. And again, I'm claiming that this is not so hard to do, but it's not trivial. Now, you could also resolve this. I mean, if you like doing resolutions, instead of doing this, you could also choose to resolve. I'm going to shoehorn it in right here. I apologize, but I actually had my blackboards planned out. So I could also choose to resolve the residue field over A. And in this case, if I resolve the residue field C, resolving it as an A module, A being the Ehrlich-Solomon algebra, you'll see some picture that looks like this, 1, 6, 25. And in fact, what happens in this particular case is everything lies on the top line. Why would this be what we see? Well, certainly I got 6 variables. To get the residue field, I just quotient by all my variables. There's 6 of them, so I have a linear map with variables. How about this map? Well, what's the kernel of the map of variables? We're in the X-tree algebra. You have exactly these sorts of Kazool-type relations. There's 6 choose 2, which is 15, right? X, Y times Y, X. So you get 15 Kazool relations. Exterior algebra, well, that's whether or not you're in the exterior algebra. We, of course, have the squares of the variables, because in the exterior algebra, E squared is 0, so that's 15 plus 6 is 21, but there were 4 more linear syzygies, and those other linear syzygies here correspond to the simple fact that each of these generators in our ideal decomposes as a product of linear forms. So that means that I have 4 relations on linear forms, and that's where these extra syzygies come from. At any rate, this is these two things. So I feel like I want to imitate Emanuele and say, listen up. So I see a lot of people dozing off, especially the topologists, just saying, okay, so this is fun for you because, well, I'm a lowbrow commutative algebraist. These are fun things that I can turn my computer on and do, so you can do lots of experiments and come up with stuff. So who cares? So T-O-P-O-L-O-G-Y. So now I want to do some topology. So I want to talk about phi k and theta k. So the lower central series ranks and the Chen ranks. So if G is my arrangement group, and these phi k of pi 1, where pi 1 is the fundamental group of the arrangement. So so there's beautiful formulas for these phi k. So for an, starting about, I guess, 25 years ago, Kono gave the LCS formula for an. And then shortly after that, for fiber type arrangements, Falk and Randell. So I don't have Peter's name on the board yet, but I have progeny, so that's even better, right? So fiber type means that you have a chain of linear, a sequence of linear maps where each fiber is just a punctured copy of C. This was shown to be equivalent to supersolvable by Tarrou. So there's all these nice formulas for the phi k. And it turns out that a long chain of results, let me see, so let's say Shelton-Yuzvinsky combined with some results of Priddy, Lofwell, put in maybe Papadima, Yuzvinsky, Piva. So I don't really know what the right attribution is for this because it's a chain of things all connected. They showed that pi, all of this combined shows that 1 over 1 minus tk to the phi k. So I've got this thing, I expand it. This can be written as summation, as a, say, C vector space, tor A I C C I. So here is the first punchline. These phi k's, if you are interested in topology, the phi k's can be obtained from these numbers, these tor I, A, C, C, I. That's exactly the diagonal tors when you resolve the residue field over A. That's these numbers right here. So this relation tells you that syzygies are interesting, right? So syzygies make us happy. So that's the first formula that I want to write down. There's a second formula here. Yeah, that's a big old number, right? So this is how great this conference is. It's this number, right? As Jan-Erik says, I always do that. So I don't know why. Mike harassed me last time I gave a talk like this. Anyhow, this is all by way of background, and I got to start zipping along. So those are one thing that are interesting. Of course, there's a change ring spectral sequence that relates these tors to other numbers, tor E, A, K. K and C are interchangeable, just like Jan-Erik said. So my sometimes I'm always thinking complex, but my field will change. So you can rate those tours to these tours using change ring spectral sequence, and this is something Alex and I did. Of course, the reason you might want to do that is when you look at this example, you can see that at least on this row, well, the 4 is a little enigmatic, but anybody, if somebody said 10, 15, 20, 25, our kids would all tell us what the next number in the sequence is, right? So on this top row, at least the top row, from our one experimental example, it looks like these look easy to understand. Let's put a little question mark there, right? So these numbers are going to be related by change of ring spectral sequence to these numbers. These numbers look easy to understand. So the last thing now, in the introductory part, is connection to resonance varieties. So connecting, so here's a connection to resonance varieties. I guess I shouldn't be silly. So the connection to resonance varieties. So we already have seen resonance varieties derived, or defined rather. So I take my OS algebra. You can tell I'm an algebraist. I'm writing my graded pieces down here instead of upstairs. So this is an arrangement, say, of D planes and CN. And it stops here. And I'm going to write this F of A, which is a little bit mysterious. But this, what I'm doing here is I'm wedging with a generic one form. This is equal to summation XI EI 1 to D. So these EIs are the variables in my exterior algebra. Of course, if I wedge twice with this, I'm over the exterior algebra, I get 0. So this is a complex. And we saw the resonance varieties, define the resonance varieties are the homology of this complex. So, and in particular, the places where you can specialize this to get homology. So the resonance varieties, H, let's call this complex A, lambda. These are the HI of A, lambda. And so, the first resonance variety, so Mike described these neighborly partitions, so Mike had the first results, and he described necessary conditions to be in R1, and then Libgober, Yuzvinsky, and Cohen Susiu, almost essentially simultaneously. I don't know, Alex and Dan can harass me, I guess, since Sergey and Anatoly aren't here, about the particular order here, S-U-C-I-U. Is that right, Alex? Maybe I'll misspell your name. And let's see, so prove that the R1 is actually a union of, it's a subspace arrangement. Cohen, Orlik, higher resonance varieties also showed that they're linear, and a bunch of other things here. I should say actually, one of the results that I want to talk about is that Dan and Alex showed that this is V of N of B. This is something called the linearized Alexander invariant. It's kind of weird because if you think of this as a complex, right, we write down these differentials, you get matrices in the XI choosing bases for each of these spaces. And if you suddenly now think of having tensored this complex of vector spaces with a polynomial ring in the XIs, this turns out to be an exact sequence of modules over the ring in the XI variables. So that's due to Eisenbud, Popescu, and Yuzvinsky. Show that this is an exact sequence. And what Alex and I realized was that this B is actually just the penultimate X of this weird module F of A, S, where S is equal to C of X1 through XN. So this the resonance variety turns out to be the support locus of this X1 in unpublished work or work in progress. Graham and I showed that a similar formula holds, that the higher resonance varieties are the union of the annihilator V, I guess, of the union of V of the annihilator of all the X starting at position I. So X I greater than or equal to I of F of A S. So what's the relevance of all this? You're saying, well, you're just rambling on, Hal, and putting names up on the board, which would be a fair objection at this point. But if you use something called the Bernstein-Gelfand-Gelfand correspondence, the dimensions of these, this is a graded module, the dimensions of this graded module turn out to be precisely on the nose the dimensions of the graded pieces of tor I E A C in degree I plus 1. That is, these numbers turn out to be these numbers. Dan and Alex also showed that these numbers are computing the Chen ranks, these theta k. These are the LCS ranks. Let's say it's the phi k of g mod g double prime, where g is my arrangement group. And this G double prime is, take the commutator of your group, and then take the commutator of the commutator. That's this G double prime. So these are interesting topological objects. Okay, so these things, the Chen ranks, get encoded in this, the Hilbert series of this, which turn into the linear syzygies of the resolution of the Orlich-Solomon algebra over the exterior algebra. So suddenly, again, this is a topological object. It comes from the fundamental group, and it is manifested in terms of syzygies. So syzygies are nice. And I should say one last conjecture. So there's two conjectures, resonance LCS conjecture and resonance Chen ranks, which I won't write down on the board. But with no hypothesis at all on your arrangement, the Chen ranks are supposed to be expressed completely in terms of the resonance varieties. With certain hypotheses on your arrangement, the LCS ranks can also be thusly expressed. So half of this conjecture is true. This one is still, in many cases, wide open. So interesting topological conjectures can be related in a natural way to syzygies. So that's the introduction, and I'm 20 minutes in. And I haven't even put any of the objects of my title on the board yet, so we should rectify that. So, the Ehrlich-Tyrell algebra and tube formality. So I now want to, in this, I want to define the objects that I'm going to be interested in here. So the Ehrlich-Tyrell algebra is a commutative analog of the OS algebra. So what are we going to do? So I should say a little bit of history. So Ehrlich and Tyrell introduced this algebra to solve a question of Amoto, and in particular, what they proved was that the the Hilbert series, so HS stands for the Hilbert series, of, and I'm going to call it the Artinian Ehrlich-Tyrell algebra, so I'll define this in a second, is equal to the Poincaré polynomial of the arrangement. So this is their result. So now I got to tell you who this AOT and OT are. So AOT, so let's say that A is a configuration of D planes in CN, as usual. So now what we're going to do is we're going to take and we make a polynomial ring, a commutative ring, in x1 through x to the d. Actually, let me use y's here. y1 through y to the d. And then I mod out, in this AOT case, I mod out by the squares of the variables, which is sort of in some sense natural. If you look at this formula, you're thinking it better be an Artinian thing. This is, you know, this dies in at some point. But then we also mod out by some relations fi. So the whole guts of this matter, or of this algebra, is how do we define these fi? These are supposed to be some sort of commutative analogs of the Ehrlich-Solomon relations. So instead of, I'm going to do a little example. So basically what these guys are if summation aili, these are the defining forms, is a dependency, say 1 to m, then we get a generator of this ideal of the following form. We get a generator of summation ai y1 yi hat ym, I equals 1 to m, right? So this is, you encode the coefficients of the dependency in the monomial. So in particular, if I had something, a stupid example, if I had something like x, y, z, x plus 2, y plus 3, do it even simpler. How about that? So if I had an example like this, obviously minus 1 times this minus 2 times this plus 1 times this is 0. So my relation would be minus 1 times y2, y3, minus 2 times y1, y3, plus 1 times y1, y2. So that's the kind of relations we get. So that's the definition of the Ehrlich-Tyrell algebra. Is that okay? So it's, oh, Tushna, sorry, I see I'm way too low. So, oops. Is that better? So some of the folks in this quadrant leaning. All right, so there's that. So how about this other notion of two-formality? So two-formality was introduced by Falk and Randell. It's very easy to define. So an arrangement A is two-formal if all dependencies among the forms are generated by dependencies among triples. So in particular, this would, this actually, let's see. So if I took four generic lines in P2, right? So obviously there's a relationship among those four lines, right? I've got four lines and three variables. There's a relationship, but I don't have any triple points. There's no dependency among three of them, right? So there's a dependency. It's not generated by a dependency among three hyperplanes. So this is not a formal arrangement, right? Is everybody with me on this? Okay. So who cares? So I think Mike and Dick's original motivation was that k pi 1s and quadratic, those arrangements of quadratic OS algebras, are too formal. Originally, this property was called formality. I think that's bad terminology because, of course, there's other a topological notion of formality. So I would propose always calling this notion of to formality instead of formality. So this was Mike and Dick, and then Sergei Yuzvinsky showed that free arrangements are too formal. But he also provided a counterexample showing that this property is not combinatorial. Combinatorial means you can't spot it from the OS algebra. So Yuzvinsky provided this example. Maybe I'll tweak it a little bit here. So what I've got here so far is six linear forms. Now I'm going to connect opposite vertices. So I now have nine lines in P2. And how can I say that this is the counterexample to two formality being combinatorial? Well, all the multiple points, all the triple points, all the other intersections are normal crossings, only two things intersect. And if you look at this and you're an algebraic geometer, anytime you've got six points that look like this, there's sort of two things that six points in P2 can do that are interesting. Either they're on a conic or not on a conic. So the point is that the nonlinear geometry intrudes into the picture. So either these six points lie on a conic or they don't. And that's the distinguishing feature. So it's pretty cool because now subtle nonlinear geometry enters the picture. So that's, at least to me, one of the reasons why this two-formality property is interesting, because it's clearly picking up some nonlinear geometry of the arrangement. Let me just say a two-second aside here. Why should six points not lie on a conic? When you hear somebody say something like, oh, six points impose independent conditions, there's a six-dimensional space of degree two monomials in three variables, right? So we have x squared, y squared, z squared, xy, xz, and yz, right? So there's our six monomials. What does it mean for, so if I take a generic degree two polynomial, I have a0, a1, plus a5, right? There's my generic degree two polynomial. You hand me six points. If you hand me a point, p0, p1, p2, for this point to lie on this conic, I just plug the stupid thing in, right? It has to be zero. But now what I'm going to do is I think of taking this point and make a matrix where I plug this point into each of these monomials. I get a matrix with six entries here, and then I think of my coefficient vectors, my indeterminants, as being here. So this would have to be in the kernel of the matrix, right, where I've evaluated my monomials of the point. Well, if you have six points, each point gives you a row in this matrix. You get a 6x6 matrix. The condition that the conic contain those points means the matrix drops rank. The matrix has a kernel. That's a determinal condition on the coefficients of this matrix, right? So that's, you just work it out and you see that that's what it means. So that was a stupid little aside. I apologize. Looks like you guys are rather nonplussed. I got to make sure I don't spoil anybody's appetite for lunch. So that's it. And so because the nonlinear geometry is causing this difference in two formal properties, you know that you're never going to be able to distinguish this guy with the OS algebra. Uli. The two formal one is on a conic. On conic equals two formal. So it's the natural candidate to try to distinguish this. If you want, I don't remember who mentioned this, maybe it was Mike or someone said, you know, is there an algebra that can pick this difference up? Well, the OS algebra certainly can't, but the happy thing about the Ehrlich-Tarrow algebra is that it encodes all the interesting geometry. You can actually reconstruct from the dependencies, you can reconstruct the whole arrangement. So you think, well, let me try and do these resolutions, because if you're a commutative algebraist, you think, I like it. So you do for this arrangement, you look at the Artinian version. There's no difference in the Betti numbers. You look at the non-Artinian version. So now I forget about the quadrics. You look at the Betti numbers. It's the same for both those things. And you think, this was a good candidate. Wasn't what I wanted. But you don't stop there because, of course, the formality property is generated by, it depends on these dependencies among triples. A dependency among three hyperplanes gives you a quadratic generator of the OT algebra. So then you say, well, let me just look at the degree 2 piece of the OT algebra. So when you look at the degree 2 piece of the OT algebra, here's what the free resolution looks like, the graded Betti numbers look like when you're on a conic. Here's what the graded Betti numbers look like when you're off a conic. So you look at just the degree 2 piece of the ideal, boom, the difference gets picked up. And so here's a theorem waiting to be proved, right? So we have our one example, and we know there's a theorem. Notice the codimension here. So the projective dimension here is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So PDIM equals 6. But notice that's exactly the difference between, that's D minus N, where D was the number of hyperplanes and N was the ambient space, right? 9 minus 3. Whereas here, the projective dimension is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's sort of the genesis. So here's the main theorem that I want to prove now. Maybe I'll erase some of this junk. Well, I should just go up. So theorem. So I should mention, this is joint work with a former student of mine, Stefan Toaneanu. Make an advertisement. So Stefan is a postdoc. This is his final year of his postdoc. So many of you will be, as you sort through job applications, you will see an application from Stefan. So he's a clever guy, and he's a lot of fun to work with. I always, when he was a grad student, there's some grad students that you really don't look forward to your meeting with them, right? So I always look forward to my meetings with Stefan. So that's not true for the grad students. Everybody always wants to meet with grad students. So. So what's the theorem? The theorem is the following. So A is two formal if and only if the codimension of I2 is equal to D minus N. So it's a really nice, I think, simple encapsulation of this formality condition that is captured by the Ehrlich-Tyrrell algebra. So the Ehrlich-Tyrrell algebra has not gotten a whole lot of attention, but it's neat. I mean, it captures these subtle geometric properties, and here's an example of such a geometric property it captures. Yes. So what's the proof? I want to actually, there's sort of two reasons for giving a proof. Oh, a question? Sorry. Yeah, the projective dimension. Well, that's what I mean there. I don't mean projective dimension over here. I didn't mean codimension over here. So you'll see it. So there's two reasons to give a proof. Either it contains some really novel ideas other people can use. Well, I'm going to apologize, that's not the case. Or it's aesthetically pleasing. So I think this proof is aesthetically pleasing. Of course, the problem is this. You guys may have decided that my aesthetics do not match your aesthetics, which is bad news for you guys at this point. Bad news for anybody who's decided that. So I want to prove. Let's do the proof over here. So the proof has two parts. Step one. So I want to map k of y1 through yd to k of 1 over L1, 1 over LD, where these are the defining linear forms of my arrangement. It's easy to check that I, the Ehrlich-Tyrrell ideal, is in the kernel of this. I is contained, let's call this phi, I is contained in kernel of phi. So what I want to claim is that this is an equality here. Once I prove that this is an equality, I will know several things. If I prove this is an equality, what I get immediately is that I is a non-degenerate, rational variety of dimension n. Why do I get these things? Well, once I prove that this thing is the kernel, then this mod this is isomorphic to this ring. This ring, the field of fractions of this ring, is the same thing as the field of fractions of 1 over x1 through 1 over xn. That gives you the rationality and the dimension, and the non-degenerate, that means it's not contained in a hyperplane. It's not contained in a hyperplane because there's no linear forms in this ideal. So this is the first step. And the way that one proves this, so just a little sketch. You guys can't see over here. Let me move over here. Sketch proof. So let's call this algebra C of A. So about 3 or 4 years ago, Hero proved that the Hilbert series of this algebra C of A is equal to the Poincaré polynomial of A, but where T is replaced by T over 1 minus T. Okay? So this is Tyrrell. Now, we have the addition-deletion theorem, right? So we know that P of A T equals P of A prime T plus T P A double prime T, right? So all that I have to do is show my Hilbert series satisfies this recursion, and then I'll be done by induction, right? So I can use this to get an these two results to get an inductive proof, assuming, of course, that I can figure out what the Hilbert series of this thing is, right? If the Hilbert series of this is the Hilbert series of this, I'm done, right? They have to be the same. So now, what do we do? Well, what I do is, the standard trick when you're looking at the OS algebra, when you're looking at Hilbert series, is you want to find, NBC basis, right? But this is not the Orlik-Solomon algebra, so you don't have the NBC basis being a Grodner basis, but there's a result of Proudfoot. So actually, there's now a grandchild here because Nick Proudfoot was Mike's REU student, right, Mike? So this is like a grandchild here. So, although I guess there's other grandchild. Are there any Dick students in the? No. Okay. So a grandchild is on the board anyhow. So Proudfoot Spire. That again, the broken circuits are a universal Grodner basis for this guy. This guy being the Orlik-Tyrrell ideal. So once I know that, then it suffices to show this for the initial ideals. So now I want to show for initial ideals. So I got a short exact sequence that looks like this. So pick Y1. This is going to be the linear form corresponding to a hyperplane that I throw away. I get a tautological short exact sequence that looks like this. Now, if you're a topologist, you might be saying, oh, this is stupid. Shut up, Hal. But I'm putting this on the board and sketching the proof because this is actually a good trick. So you have an ideal. You throw somebody else in, right? So there's clearly a surjection from here to here. What's the kernel of this map? Well, the kernel of this map right here, is just multiplication by your new guy, in this case, Y1. So the kernel of this map is obviously just going to be the stuff that gets killed over here. That is the stuff which, when multiplied against Y1, lands here. By definition, polynomials which multiply against this that land in this ideal, that's this ideal quotient here. And there's a shift here because I'm multiplying by a degree 1 element. So now, we know by induction, in this result, we know the Hilbert series of these two suckers, and that gives us, so this one turns out to be the Hilbert series, this is the deleted guy over here, which makes sense, because when you throw this relation out, you lose all the initial forms that involved him. That means you're getting exactly the relations on the with that hyperplane removed. So this is P of A T over 1 minus T over here. And this one turns out, this shift gives you a multiplication of T. You actually have one extra variable. Of course, the Hilbert polynomial for A double prime should have one fewer variables, but so to get rid of that fewer variable, you get a 1 minus T factor here. This T shift, this T, because we have an extra variable here, times P of A double prime T. So boom, using Hero's result and this result of Proudfoot-Spire and a stupid little short exact sequence gives us the theorem. So that proves that this guy is this nice non-degenerate rational variety of a certain dimension. Okay, so then the second part of the proof, and again, it's kind of neat because I guess usually this is a very simple algebraic computation, but I don't think I've ever seen people computing, at least in arrangements, dimensions of tangent spaces to objects. So now here's key idea. That RE, by the way, is Rota's exhortation. So Rota tells us that when we give a talk, we're supposed to give people something to take home. So you guys have to remind me, there's something to take home. You might not think you've got something to take home yet, but there's something to take home coming. So you guys have to tell me how. Give me... Ha ha. Anyhow, so there is something for everybody to take home. Besides this one, the Orlik-Tyrrell algebra, which I think there's a lot of neat properties that still have to be investigated there. Anyhow, so now here's the main lemma. From this lemma, the result follows easily. So let's let X equals V of I2 intersect C star D minus 1 containing P D minus 1, right? So again, remember, we're working in C of X1 y1 through yd. So I want to look at the quadratic piece of my ideal. I want to intersect it with the torus, and then the result is that A is too formal, if and only if this x has codimension d minus n. And then from this piece, it's easy to actually go back to just this piece having the right codimension. So how do you prove something like this? How do you check the codimension of an object? Well, first off, we know already that we don't know that this is an irreducible ideal, and in fact, it typically won't be. I was a nice prime ideal, right? This is an irreducible non-degenerate rational variety. I isn't a prime ideal, but I too isn't. We've thrown away a bunch of stuff. So this guy might have some other components, but I want to be cavalier for a second and just think I'm going to call a generic point something that lies on one of the components, which is terrible, but it is what it is. So I want to check the compute. So to check, you'd compute the dimension of the tangent space at a point P to X for P some sort of a generic point. And like I said, I'm using generic terribly because it's not really generic, but let's forget about that for a minute. So I want to compute the tangent space. So suppose we have some relation in our OT algebra like this, AY1, Y2 plus B, Y2, Y1, Y2, Y1, Y3 plus C, Y2, Y3. Right? So here's one of the polynomials. Let's see what part of the Jacobian matrix is going to look like. So part of the Jacobian matrix, D1, D2, D3. So for this guy, it's going to look like when I differentiate with respect to Y1, I get an AY2 plus BY3. When I differentiate with respect to Y2, I get an AY1 plus CY3. I guess these should spread out. And when I differentiate with respect to Y3, I get a BY1 plus CY2. So now I want to evaluate at some point P. So evaluate at a point P. But first I want to do a little side trick. So if we call this F, notice that F of P has to be 0 because this point at some point P in X, P lies on your variety. So we're going to get F of P equals 0. So I get that AP1, P2 plus B, so P is P1 through PN, BP1, P3 plus C, P2, P3 equals 0. But because my point is on the torus, I can scale this. So this is saying A over P3 plus B over P2 plus C over P1 is equal to 0. Fine. So big whoop. So this is going to be something I'm going to use here now. So if I this when I plug the P in here, I've got this is equal to, I won't do the whole thing out, AP2 plus BP3, which I can rewrite as P2 P3 times A over P3 plus B over P2. Haven't done anything, right? But now I can use this relation to replace this with a P2 P3 times minus C over P1. And now again, I use this, I scale by the product of things. So if I scale this guy, I just divide through by the product of the PIs, I get minus C over P1 squared, right? And this same little argument applies right down the diagonal. So here I get a minus B over P2 squared, and here I get a minus A over P3 squared. So what? Well, if you multiply this matrix by a diagonal matrix on this side with 1 over the, with P1 squared, P2 squared, P3 squared on the diagonal, what I see popping out is I see just these C, B, and A. That was the dependency on my linear forms. So the matrix that pops out here is precisely my relations. So what's the rank of this matrix of relations? That's the dimension of the space of relations spanned by three relations. And that's the theorem. So it turns out to be, I think this is kind of a pretty cool trick. So I should say again, Stefan, more plugs for Stefan. Stefan was a full partner. I told him to look at the tangent space, but this was his, I said, go look at the tangent space, and then he produced this clever little argument. So hire him anyhow. So that's the main theorem. I have 5 more minutes left. You still don't have anything in your goodie bags to take home. So let's see. So now you might start, well, at least if you're a commutative algebraist, which many of you aren't, you might say, well, at least let's see some simple examples of what these graded Betti numbers look like, and can we figure out anything from them? So let's do some simple examples of graded Betti numbers. So here's what you would tell the computer to do right away. So for the Ehrlich-Tarrow algebras of these four arrangements in P2, this is what there's stuff down here, but this is what the tops of the graded Betti diagrams look like. So here I have three lines intersecting a point and a generic line in infinity, similarly four lines, five lines, and six lines. These are the Betti numbers you see. Now, these might not speak to you, but in fact what this tells you is that you have a resolution called an Eigen-Northcott complex, N-O-R-T-H-C-O-T-T complex, which tells you that the corresponding Ehrlich-Tarrow ideal is a rational normal curve in projective space, if it's smooth, and it turns out that it is. So this is actually one of the things I was going to give you guys to take home. So this is kind of cool. So this is, suppose you have a map from Rn to Rm. Let's call it phi. So let's call this f and g. And let's say m is less than or equal to n. It doesn't really matter. And now I want to take and I want to resolve the minors of this matrix. So suppose I take the maximal minors, so I've got wedge M of F mapping to wedge M of G, which is of course just R, goes to R mod the ideal of the maximal minors, so I M by M if V goes to 0. So there's the start of an exact sequence. The question is, how do you get a free resolution? So it's actually a really rather beautiful picture. So if you think about it, this matrix here, of course, you get a map phi star, which maps G to F dual. And so what I'm going to put over here is a wedge M plus 1 F, tensor G. And if I tell you this map, then you spot how the whole resolution goes. So this is really kind of cute. So where should a C tensor, say F1, F M plus 1 go? Well, it wants to go over here, so your natural inclination is to send this to something like minus 1 to the I, F1, Fi hat, Fm plus 1. But of course, the question is, what do you do with your little missing guy? Well, you've got a functional over here which just has to eat the damn thing. So we take times phi star of Fi. And that's it. And it's easy to check that this guy lives in the kernel. It's a little more difficult to check that it's the whole kernel. But now you can kind of guess what comes next, right? So we had the wedges go up. So now we're going to have a wedge M plus 2 F over here. What's going to go over here? Well, it's not too hard to check that it's a sim 2 of G dual tensored. And now you're done, right? So this is how you resolve the maximal minors. It's kind of cool because the submaximal minors, this is just a totally random aside, the submaximal minors, you get different Schur functors, right? These are the simplest two Schur functors here, sim and wedge. And I've always thought that actually in the construction of the one-minimum model where you have these maps between various tensors, because you keep sort of you keep adding on stuff to kill the kernel, that there's some of these kernels that I think are Schur functors. So something to work out at some point in time. Anyhow, so this is the Eigen-Northcott complex, and that's what those guys are. And so these things turn out, the corresponding varieties turn out to be rational normal curves, which are one of these are smooth and they're rational normal curves. You can do similar results for graphic arrangements and start to analyze things. I'm out of time, but I want to leave you with one last little thought for those folks who are interested in resonance varieties. So if you take the one of these Pappus arrangements, so this I think is called 9-3-1, one of the Pappus arrangements. So I ran out of having blackboards that I could prepare. So let's see, I get something like this. I heard a loud sigh. I'm going to finish soon. Is that you, Alex? All right. This guy. So where I'm drawing in my triple points here. There we go. And then something at infinity, right? So I've got to. So I have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 triple points. Yeah, so that's good. So I, in this case, is not equal to I2. So you have this Ehrlich-Tarrow algebra. The I2 consists of, let's see, how many quadrics is it? This has 9, well, of course, I'm being stupid, 9 quadrics, which come from these 9 triple points. But I picks up an additional 4 cubics. But if you do the primary decomposition of I2, you get I intersect L1, intersect L2, intersect L3. So these are linear, these are each a P2, and their equations are 0, 1, 2, 5, 7, 8, 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 0, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8. Now, this looks like some sort of random gibberish, but when you look at those linear primes, you say, let's see. So, well, there's some stuff that got left out. If I look at this guy, the stuff that got left out were 3, 4, and 6 got left out of this. Things that are left out of this are 0, 2, and 8. And the stuff that's left out of this linear prime are 1, 5, and 7. So this recipe that Mike described for resonance in terms of neighborly partitions, there is a resonance component. This thing has a P1 in its resonance variety. The combinatorial formula for that resonance component is given by this partition right here. So these Ehrlich-Tirau algebras are actually picking up in some rather subtle fashion the resonance variety. So I think, I don't know what the end of the story is there, but I'm already 2 minutes over, so I thank you for your patience. Tom, I'll try to convince you that these things are useful after at lunch. No, because, well, I mean, it's a good question. So you'd want to have some sort of a deformation, right, where there's some deformation where on one hand you get an exterior algebra. I don't really know how you would do that. Maybe, and on the other hand, you get a symmetric algebra. So I don't know how you could have some sort of uniform family where one deformation is the OT and one deformation is the OS. But that's sort of the kind of thing you'd like.
What is the X value of the
order around? I haven't computed it. I did look at the X modules of it, but I haven't studied the X algebra at all. So, grist for the mill.
So you can define this sort of algebra for any space for which the flow is generally gave one. You replace the extra algebra. There's a portion of the extra algebra that all so you replace the algebra. So the algebra would be set for relations, right?
Well, actually, so the topological interpretation in this case, and I was actually afraid that either Igor or Corrado would harass me into revealing it, but when you look at what you get, so we were getting these rational varieties of the dimension equal to the, so in the case of that we were looking at, we get rational surfaces. Well, there's only one natural thing to do with a line arrangement in P2, which is to blow up at a bunch of points. And in fact, it turns out that you can see these Ehrlich-Tirau algebras is the image of the blow up of P2 at a bunch of points, which is really, I think, pretty cool. So, and you can write down quite explicitly the divisor that gives you this. So for example, here's a stupid thing. I know I should shut up, but that original example that I did with three lines, so there was a single cubic relation, right? So I'm in four variables, that's in P3. What happens when you blow up P3, or when you blow up P2 at 6 points? The standard algebraic geometry 101 example is if you blow up P2 at 6 generic points and use cubics through those 6 points to embed, you get a smooth cubic surface. As soon as you look at the singular locus of this cubic, you see that you got 4 singular points. What the hell are they? Well, when you blow up, when your points are not generic, each of these lines through these 3 points, you've got exceptional divisors living above these. These lines get contracted, creating 4 singular points on the surface. So this is what, again, like Corrado was saying, being stupid, I was looking at these much more complicated things, trying to figure out what the hell it was. And as soon as you do this, you recognize what's going on. So. Segre, so the classical name. It's so classical, it's got its own name, the Segre cubic surface. So that's an interpretation for a very geometric, classical geometric interpretation for this Ehrlich-Tirau algebra. But I don't know, I don't quite know what would... I guess, yeah, you could just encode the It's the weights of the dependencies, so I don't see any reason why you couldn't do this for an arbitrary cohomology ring. I just don't know what it would mean. So that's, I mean, but in this case, it's pretty cool. I mean, it gives you something that's related to a desingularization of the, I mean, some, well, not a desingularization, as we just saw over here, but it's some, it's trying to be a desingularization somehow. Okay. So, anyhow. All the grad students who didn't answer have to buy me a beer tonight. So if you passed on your chance to get a free beer, you should pay, buy a beer
to
the speaker.
No, you can't escape, though. You have to take a picture.
Ah, okay. Huh? BGG, okay. Yeah. Oh, picture first. All right. You like the little, isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Isn't that cool? The resonance component jumps out at you?
Yeah. It's a proper configuration. It's for the net, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like a usual thing, right?
Yeah. Anytime you have
to. Yeah, yeah.
Well, otherwise.
Yeah, no, but just you have to see this. You have to see this picture on it, there are 3 cubics, right? It's a pencil of cubics, right?
Yeah.
And there are 3 members, 3 bands. It's a complicated distribution, but it's not quite obvious. But you were right. It was too fast. For me, it was too fast.
Well, but check this out. So look at over here. So you can. But check it out. Look at this. This was this map, right? So this, when we motion, we quotient by eye, that's isomorphic to this. And this turns out to be the section ring. These are sections. Think about it. If you clear the denominator, multiply this by the product of all the LIs.
The nine,
what's the divisor that I